All right, guys, welcome to the show. Today on the show, I have someone by the name of Shell Horowitz. He's on the show today to talk about, basically Go Green marketing. He's on the show to share his story. I found Shell on a site called Harrow, aka helperreporter.com. It's basically a platform used for kind of finding press and finding people, in your niche to, serve whatever purpose it is that you're looking to find. So welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks. So do you kind of want to share your story and talk a little bit about marketing and entrepreneurship?
Sure. I've been doing this kind of a ridiculously long time. The first action I can think of that I think of as a marketing action in my life was when I was 15 and active in some peace and social change stuff at my high school, and I started writing articles. We had a regular paper, which you had to be in the journalism class to write for, but we had a couple of alternative papers, including one that was run by some of the school's few right-wingers. And even though our politics were very different, they were all friends of mine, and so they actually had me write for them. And they ran my stuff with disclaimers saying, this does not represent the views of the management. Mm-hmm. It was a hoot because there I was, writing for essentially an enemy paper. And they were happy to have me, and I was happy to write for them. And I figured that maybe there might have been some people who did share their politics who might have seen something I wrote and maybe changed their minds. So that was really the first conscious step I took toward marketing as a junior in high school way back in the day. And actually, by that time I was already involved in environmental causes and peace causes, and the business part came much, much later after college when I realized I was essentially unemployable, tried to start my own business. It took me, I guess, three times to get that right, and in 1982 I finally started the business that I now run, 1981, I now run. It started as a term paper typing service, which I haven't done one of those in more than 20 years, but for the first several years that I had the business, that was a big piece of what I did. And of course, I had to get the word out, and of course, I had zero advertising budget. So I started being creative. My background, I've been trained as a journalist in college, and I just started doing flyers and posters and press releases and other low-cost, no-cost ways of getting the word out and built a viable business. And then about the third year, I got a business phone and actually a listing in the Yellow Pages. And that began to be an important source of clients for me for a while. Hasn't been for a long while now, since everybody's online. Right. And so my business has evolved long, long past typing term papers and into what I currently do is marketing and publishing, consulting and copywriting for clients around the world. So very few of my clients are even local, and therefore the Yellow Pages is not much of a factor in attracting.
Right.
But there's a lot of other great low-cost, frugal, no-cost ways to get the word out that are ethical and effective and fun, I'll have to say. So I've really focused on a lot of those. They include marketing by presenting myself as an expert in interviews like this, marketing by partnering with other people who are reaching the exact audience I'd like to reach. Occasionally, I've done some marketing with some celebrity credentials, and that's really nice, including my latest book, Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green, which I co-authored with the late J. Conrad Levinson, inventor of the guerrilla marketing brand. And so it's been a lot of stuff like that. And with my clients, I'm always looking at who they can partner with and how and where they can get exposure in the media. Should they be doing public speaking? All of this stuff in the arsenal, if you will, of low-cost, highly effective marketing.
And that's basically kind of where your book, what your book teaches, a lot of things that, save money and do things in a more efficient way.
Yeah, more efficient and also more environmentally friendly, because a lot of what I do is marketing for green companies or for companies that want to reach the green market, which there's a huge overlap, but they're not always the same thing.
Now, what types of companies would you find that are more common that you're helping out with, something like what you've written in your book?
Well, a lot of them are in the food industry, some are in hospitality, some are in manufacturing. It's really pretty diverse. certainly professional services. And it's really anybody who needs to reach that sector of the market or needs to reach whatever market they want to with a degree of efficiency and effectiveness and not a lot of money. Because, you know, you can pick one publication to advertise in and advertise enough to be noticed, and you can spend a few hundred thousand dollars on that in a year. So you want to see a very, very high return from that, and unfortunately, usually you don't. Whereas by forming a joint venture, by getting exposure in the media, by speaking in front of an audience, by doing things like establishing a blog, those cost little or nothing, and they actually work better because they build trust. One of the things about marketing from a green perspective is that a lot of it involves you being seen as the helpful and friendly expert, approachable expert that somebody can turn to, that somebody can trust and want to do business with. And it's about building relationships first before you ask for the sale.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's a good practice for sure. But in terms of like what would be some examples of ways that you know, your book has helped companies to kind of, you know, save money or, you know, help the environment with the things that you might suggest for them?
I think one of the things that people come away with after an exposure to me, if they're in the green market, they need to be aware that the green market is not monolithic, that there are really three different audiences that they're going to want to reach typically. One is the deep greens, the people like me who wake up every morning thinking, how can I make the planet better? One is what I call the lazy greens, who are people like my mother-in-law. I told my mother-in-law that I was going to tour the Markel toilet paper factory. They have been doing recycled toilet paper in the Northeast and napkins and paper towels for a ridiculously long time, but they forgot to tell anybody for many decades. But mm-hmm. They actually went recycled, believe it or not, in 1950. 1950.
Wow.
And so my mother-in-law says to me in her Queens accent, "Are you always buy Markel because it's recycled?" Well, no, actually, she always buys Markel because it's right next to the non-recycled paper in the supermarket shelf of the supermarket she's already in. She's not going to make a special trip somewhere else. But if it's right in front of her, she'll do the right thing. So she's a lazy green. And then there's the non-greens, your Hummer driving, you know, people who really don't care about these things.
Right.
There are lots of green products and services that are appropriate to market to non-greens, but they have to be marketed very differently. You can't just say, buy this because it's green. That isn't going to work with that audience. But you can say, buy this because it's more comfortable, because it's cheaper, because it'll last longer. You know, you sell the benefits. And often those benefits are a direct result of it being a green product.
Right.
So that's one big thing that come away. I think the ability to match an audience and a message is very key. I have a slide when I do my Making Your Message Sexy talks. I have the very first slide has a cover of the National Enquirer and a cover of the New Yorker. And the caption is something like, would you use the same message?
Right.
And I think that makes it pretty clear that you don't want to do that. But the other thing that they're going to come away with is an awareness that marketing is far more than advertising. Advertising is a very small subset of marketing, and it's the subset that's going to consume the most resources and usually give the least back. And if you are going to use advertising, there are ways to do it in which you're going to get a decent return. Again, it has a lot to do with who your audience is. Most of us, our audience is not everybody, and therefore the daily newspaper is not necessarily a great place to advertise. It'd be much better to take that ad budget and go to the exact market that you want to reach and right. Go to whatever trade publication they read it. And for some tiny fraction of what it would cost you to run a single ad in the newspaper, you could run a dozen ads in that trade magazine that will be in front of the audience that you want to reach every single time. And your return on that investment is going to be much, much better.
So is that, how have you been kind of advertising your, obviously you both have sort of services you offer as well as books that you're selling. I mean, I know, you know, Amazon is a huge place. So, you know, obviously you're going to get some kind of traffic going there from just people naturally if you put yourself in the right section.
And because Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green, my eighth book, is traditionally published, I actually did drive sales to Amazon. Certainly for the first couple of years it was out. And I'm only now beginning to put more attention to bringing customers to one of my own websites to make that purchase. Because at this point, it's kind of been forgotten about by the publishing company, which tends to happen for most books after a fairly short window.
Yeah.
But I did, I'd say most of the sales of that book probably came through Amazon. We did a promotion with Amazon to actually lower the price for Earth Day the first year the book was out, and that was very successful. During that campaign, it actually reached number one in the environmental category.
Wow.
And it's been on the environmental category bestseller list at least 30 times. And there's a lot of other partnerships, actually. That book is a great case study for partnerships, because obviously there was the partnership that I had with J. Conrad Levinson, where I went to him and said, you want this to be a guerrilla marketing book, don't you? And I had read enough of his books to be able to point to things he had said where I knew that he had a philosophical agreement with what I was doing, but not any real subject matter knowledge. So he was what you'd call a lazy green. And so I was able to show him that partnering with me was going to open up a whole new market of the green marketers that he would have credibility with by partnering with somebody like me, because I had the street cred and the 40 years of experience. I, of course, got to use the name, the brand, and be part of the best-selling marketing brand in history, and no one can ever take that away for the rest of my life. I am a guerrilla marketing author, co-author. And so this was obviously a big win-win, but we also had a number of other partnerships. For example, I reached out to people who edit newsletters in marketing or in the environmental world or who have blogs, and I said, help us with the launch, and here's what you will get out of it, 1, 2, 3, 4. The expectation was that they would give something for a launch package, and then they in turn would get new subscribers from people brought in by other partners.
Hmm.
So this is a fairly common model in the book world, and particularly in the world of independent publishing or independent marketing. It's not something you see much coming from the corporate publishing offices themselves. So that was another partnership. Then I wanted a charity partner. So first I approached Grameen, which is in, I think, Bangladesh, and they're a bank that has pioneered a lot of socially conscious practices like micro-lending. But they were not so easy to work with. They had a pretty bureaucratic structure. So then my second choice was Green America. It took, I think, 2 phone calls to get Green America on board as a marketing partner. And they were delighted to receive a small portion of the first month's sales in return for spreading the word to their, at the time, 94,000 members.
Wow.
And those, I went on to do a few other things with them. I've spoken at one of their conferences, and I've done 2 teleseminars for them as a featured guest. So I've now had 3 major exposures to this 100,000 people that I wouldn't have been able to reach otherwise. And of course, I also had Jay's list, which was at the time 84,000. So, you know, that's roughly 160,000 people who were exposed to this book launch because of those 2 partnerships alone. I think that's pretty good, and I think it has a lot to do with why the book did pretty well at the beginning. It really made some noise.
That's really interesting, and I've kind of done something similar myself. Just to, you know, I know I've been I have, like, you know, a different example, but in a similar light. I mean, I had you know, I have another niche website in the music industry, and I built it out, and I had, you know, I started a little fan page, and I just kind of put it up there on the side of my blog, and I kind of let people just come to it and, you know, like the page. I didn't spend any money on it. I didn't go crazy trying to promote it. And I found someone who had, you know, a similar fan page in the same niche, and they had something like 15,000 fans on it. Mm-hmm. And they agreed to let me put up their, you know, let them, let me promote their fan page. In return, they would sometimes send traffic to my site by, you know, posting blogs or entries from my website, which would then, you know, if they do that, I might get 50 to 100 visitors from any given post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We live in this funny world where it's actually in some ways a lot harder to get into the traditional media than it used to be. I mean, it used to be that when I published my first book in 1980, you know, all you had to do was publish a book and people would run the press release. But back then, publishing a book only happened 43,000 times a year as of 1990. I don't know what the 1980 number was. It was still news, particularly in your own local market. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, with 3 million books being published in the United States in a given year, not so much. But now, we are all our own media moguls.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
I have a portfolio of about 18 or 20 websites that I run. You know, I have a blog. I have a YouTube channel where I post little interviews. And there's no limit, really, to our ability to make our own media. The problem is getting readership, listenership, and viewership for it.
Yeah,
but exactly. Making the stuff has now gotten easy. Anybody can be a self-publisher, and you can publish in an edition of one. And not pay a ridiculous price. It used to be that in order to get your cost down, you had to really print 2,000-3,000 books.
Mm.
The last time that I printed more than a few hundred books at a time was 2003. Since then, there's been no need to. The quality of print on demand is such that not at all necessary. And I set up a book through either CreateSpace or Lightning Source or one of the other printers. And lo and behold, if I want a single copy shipped to an address in Texas, all I have to do is say, here's the address. I never have to see the book. And if I'm going to a conference and I want to have 15 copies to sell, I just have them come to my house. And or better yet, I'll have them go to the hotel where the conference is going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a lot less handling of the paper. And of course, many people are consuming information electronically in the first place. So it's a very, very different media landscape. And it is still not impossible to get major media coverage. I have been quoted in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, a number of times. Entrepreneur Magazine, I think I've been in there 17 times.
Wow.
And interestingly enough, most of their requests for sources specify that you have to be making a certain threshold of money that I'm nowhere near. But there are enough that don't specify that I've been able to get in there. And, you know, so if you search their site, I will come up quite a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like it's mostly a lot of connections that you've been able to build to really kind of, you know, cultivate relationships and then give you.
Well, that's a few, but a lot of it is Harrow and services like Harrow, because I have learned that the way you get press with people you don't know is you wait until they ask for sources and then you are right there. In the first hour after the queries get posted, with an intelligent, articulate response that they can quote directly if they want to, or follow up with an interview.
Yeah.
That opens the relationship. So, you know, a lot of these reporters that talked to me did not know who I was before I answered their query.
Right, yeah. And then now, obviously, like in my case, I had never heard of you before. I know, like for me, even, you know, getting a lot of the inquiries on Harrow, you know, I've got like a whole wide range of niches, people that are doing all kinds of different things. I think I even had someone contact me that, you know, they had like one of those products that, you know, it's like so simple, like some like women's, like, I forget what it was, like some sort of like accessory that you could wear around your waist. And they marketed on like the infomercials and they've been featured on TV, like on like the Dr. Oz show or something like that. And I thought to myself, like, well, I don't know if my audience would like this, but it would still, like, some of these people, it might be interesting to kind of hear, like, how they started from the ground up and made.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually be interested in hearing how you get on a show like Dr. Oz.
Yeah, or, you know, one of these, like, bigger, a lot of the talk shows, you know, things like that. I think, I forget which one exactly, but it was one of those that they were able to get featured on. You know, and things like that, that it's interesting to hear from everybody's got a different story about what it is that they're currently working on or what their focus is. So that's why I decided this is kind of my first round of interviews where I'm sort of changing up. I was very focused on a lot of bloggers and people doing different things with just online marketing or make money online kind of niches.
Yeah. Let me just close my door because there's now a second contractor in the kitchen. It's a bit noisy.
Sure, sure. But yeah, guys, for anyone who doesn't know, Harrow is Harrow's been a great tool. I know I've mentioned it in the past couple interviews, but Shell was one of the first people to reply to my inquiry on Harrow, and that's how I was able to, you know, basically meet up with him. And it was a free service. You know, I didn't have to pay any money, and I got something. I think I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but I've gotten something like 50 emails from the service. It was kind of mind blowing. I still have plenty of work to do.
Well, the nice thing about your show is it's not time sensitive, so you can work it out with them over the next. People will be shocked to hear from you, but like, oh yeah, you answered my Harrow query 3 months ago. Let's set up an interview. They'll still be happy to hear from you.
Yeah, I had one guy say, well, what's this about? You know, like he didn't know.
Well, one of the things I do with my Harrow queries is I always, the subject line will either be the subject line you put on your query, or it'll be something that relates very closely to it. It'll have the word Harrow at the beginning, Harrow colon, and then either your subject line or my modification of it. And then at the bottom, I actually paste the query so that when a reporter sends me a little quick note without anything attached saying, sounds good, let's talk, I can then go find that reporter's name by searching for it in my outbox. So like, okay, this is what this is about. Mm. And that makes a big difference in responding appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. I know you mentioned that in your email to me about the having the pitch in the subject line, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, because that way I'll be able to know what we're talking about. Because a lot of the reporters don't give me any clue when they write back. They've dropped my query out of their response. And they've changed the subject line, and I don't know who the hell they are, you know? So, but because I answer in a typical week, I'm probably putting out at least 10 query responses.
Oh, wow. Now, are you mostly focusing in like the business finance type categories? Because I know some stuff in general I've seen. I mean, I've looked a lot of the emails, but, you know, I try not to get too buried in it and dig too deep into it with my all the other stuff I've got going on.
Marketing, environmental causes or issues, and the third one is publishing, book publishing. Those are the areas of expertise that I tend to respond. And that was a strategic decision. I mean, there's a lot of things I could respond about. You know, back in the mid-90s, I was building a brand as the king of frugal fun. And there's lots and lots of queries I could respond to if I still wanted to be pushing that. But my time is limited. It's, you know, if I'm doing 10 queries a week, that means I'm spending a couple hours on this. So I'm focusing on the ones that I'm going to get a good rate of return, not only in terms of being picked up, but in terms of if there is a story, it's going to help the brand that I'm currently building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every once in a while, somebody will put up something that I'll just respond. Like if they're talking about homestay organizations, I'll often respond not to benefit me personally, but because the two homestay organizations that I'm a part of deserve more coverage. So it's a little bit of giving back if I can do a real quick thing to a reporter and say, you know, you'll want to talk to people at these organizations because often they won't have heard of it. So if there's a frugal travel story, I might pitch that there, but not necessarily myself as a source. But if they want to interview me, I'll do them an interview. But that's I think of that as community service. But I had another thought now. What was it about responding? I lost it. Sorry.
No, that's all right. But I wanted to ask, too, I thought this would be interesting. Have you done anything in particular, you know, when you get your books up on Amazon, is there anything in particular you're doing maybe to, like, boost the reviews and kind of get, like, you know, beyond, obviously, you kind of formed these joint ventures in a way and got, you know, this huge spike off your launch. But do you do any, like, tactics in terms of, like, getting more reviews and kind of?
Very little, actually, because I write really good books that get good reviews on their own. I mean, I have a list of people who've reviewed me in the past, and certainly when I have a new book out, I contact them, and several of them will review. When somebody writes me fan mail, I will say, would you mind posting this on Amazon?
Yeah, of course.
That's a very easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And I'll also say, and may I quote you? You know, so I'm building, if you go to my testimonials page, it scrolls on for a week, because anytime anybody says anything nice to me about my work, I ask them if I can quote it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, testimonials are super powerful. So of course that's a great thing to have.
Yeah. It's one of the many ways to establish third party credibility. And I've been fortunate in that a lot of industry leaders have sent me testimonials and I have never bought one.
Yeah.
You know, I only take testimonials that are honestly given by the person. I will sometimes suggest a rewrite if their writing is fuzzy, and usually they'll say fine. But I know a lot of people who purchase testimonials, and I think a purchased testimonial is not very valuable.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty – obviously, it's just bogus. I know that I was on a forum recently, and it's funny because someone launched a product through – you know, it's an internet marketing forum, and they – basically launched a product on there and seemed like pretty solid, but they had, you know, their English wasn't that great, I think. So they had someone outsource their work to have a sales page created, and the person who created the sales page for them put in two fake testimonials, and, you know, they were selling their product fairly well. And I think I actually ended up buying it. It was related to, getting some boost on Pinterest because I'm using Pinterest. And what ended up happening was the guy was questioned by the admin of the forum whether or not his testimonials were real, and he admitted that they were fake, and that basically got him an immediate ban from the forum.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. You never want to lie about this stuff. In fact, lying is a bad business tactic. You may get the immediate sale, but you will lose the long-term customer, which is far, far more important. But I can tell you, I watched, for example, I have a testimonial on one of my books, on my sixth book. I have a testimonial from Jack Canfield, co-creator of Chicken Soup.
Oh, wow.
I watched that testimonial sell copies of the book. And the process went like this. I'd hand somebody the book. They'd look at the front cover. They'd flip over the back. They'd see Jack's testimony. Wow, how'd you get Jack Canfield? Then they'd open the front cover and then see the other 50 testimonials that were printed.
Yeah.
And then they didn't usually even look at the book. They fished in their wallets. They handed me a $20 bill. The book was $17.50. They said, don't worry about the change. I need this now. Okay. So thank you, Jack. I've had testimonials from Mark Joyner, another big marketing light, Joel McCower, who runs greenbiz.com, the single most important site in the green business community. I have Jackie Ottman, who's a direct competitor. She has a book called The New Rules of Green Marketing. I've got a blurb in her book. She's got a blurb in mine. Mm. And that's another big important piece of this, is that your competitors, I define a competitor as somebody you haven't figured out how to partner with yet.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic too. I know when I kind of started this whole thing, I remember I said to a guy, I said, hey, I was thinking about starting an interview show. And he goes, oh, like this guy. And then I ended up going to his site and he was doing exactly what I thought I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then I started hearing about more people. And since then, I've interviewed all those people and I've built friendships with them.
Yep, yep. Because one of the wonderful things is what you're doing is what's called an elastic market. Yeah. Just like I, as a writer, if I walk into somebody's house and I see a marketing book on the shelf, the chances are 85, 90% that next to it is going to be another marketing book and another marketing book and another marketing book. People don't buy one book in a field they're interested in. They buy many. Mm. And therefore, it's not like if I buy a Toyota, it means I didn't buy a Chevy. that's an inelastic market. There's only so many of them you're going to want. But yeah. If you are in an elastic market and information in any form is an elastic market, your competitors are your allies and you can work together and you can, the only time you'll ever hear me quote George W. Bush is his wonderful phrase, make the pie higher. And I love that, because it's what I've been doing in my work for more than 30 years.
Yeah.
I did a partnership all the way back. I've always tried to be on very friendly terms with my competitors. Even way back in the day when my business was typing term papers, I got a call from one of my friendly competitors one day saying, I want to order a few things from Quill and I don't have enough to make the minimum for free shipping. Do you need anything? And I said, what's Quill? Well, that phone call saved me thousands of dollars in office supplies over the next 20, 30 years.
Wow.
Because Quill turned out to be this huge office supply discounter in Illinois that I didn't know about. And their prices were like 30, 40% lower than what I was paying locally.
Yeah.
So because I was on good terms with that guy, he called me. And later when he closed his shop and moved out of the area, he sent me all his clients.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know that, since kind of starting this whole thing, I've always liked the idea of just connecting with people and how kind of powerful that is and, what it can really do for you in terms of both business and in the, job world, whatever it is that you're might be trying to accomplish. I know recently I connected with someone who I had met them online like 7 years ago, and they ran a web hosting company, and they invited me to come take a look. I was interested in this kind of thing back when MySpace was popular. I had all these key terms in my profile, and he found that I was near his college. He invited me to come by, and I said, "Well, I don't go to school there anymore. I'm graduated. I don't live in the area." And I kept in touch with him the past 7 years, and I ended up asking him recently about a web hosting question. I knew, obviously, this guy would know. That's what he does for a living. Mm-hmm. And he invited me out to tour his kind of thriving business 7 years later where he's gone with it. And I went and met up with him, and then he invited me and my girlfriend out to dinner recently. And now he's invited me to his wedding. And now he's talking to me about, possibly he works alone, but he's talking about the possibility of taking me on part-time to work with him.
Wonderful. And a lot of these things now, what you've done is you've now networked with somebody who's in a complementary business, which is also a very, very good way to grow your network.
Exactly.
But the thing is, you want to have a lot of these relationships in place long before you need to ask them a favor. So going back to the book launch, when I went to these bloggers and newsletter editors and said, you want to promote this book launch, don't you? These were people who, in some cases, for years, I'd been sending little notes saying, oh, I loved your article about this, or when you wrote about this, you didn't think about this other thing. Having dialogue with them, not because I was going to hit them up later, but because I wanted to do that. I wanted to build relationships. So the result of that, for me, the largest clients have tended to be the publishing consulting clients, people who want to go on the journey from unpublished writer to well-published and well-marketed book author. And those clients are going to spend five figures with me. And the majority of those clients have come to me because they found me on a competitor's website.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, obviously getting yourself out there as much as possible, even if it's in that light of the competitor, it sounds like it's becoming an advantage, or getting to know as many people as possible and building relationships with those people.
Yeah, because we all see this as a way of making the pie higher. John Kramer, who, that's K-R-E-M-E-R, is one of the two or three top book marketing consultants in the country. He and I were speaking at the same conference, and he went on this riff about biological marketing, and I had my little handspring visor with a fold-out keyboard PDA back then. This is 2002, I guess, when I was writing Principal Profit. And I just banged in the whole thing in my notes. I'm a fast typist. Mm-hmm. And then I went to him and I said, this is great stuff. I'm writing this book. Can I put you in the book? So there's a big section of the book called John Kramer and Biological Marketing.
Yeah.
And that was carried over to Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green, which is the revised and updated and expanded version of Principal Profit, and that was Principal Profit was self-published and Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green was published by Wiley. And so because I went to that conference, he and I already knew each other, and we had a colleague relationship for a long time, but it was after I put him in that book that I started getting a lot of referrals from his website. And as I moved in the direction of doing the full service book shepherding, I'd say he's probably sent me at least three really good clients.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, basically you gave him something for free. You asked, hey, can I feature you? And then obviously now you've been able to build a relationship with him, and that's turned around and helped you, helped you in return.
Yeah, I think my favorite building relationship story would be Mark Joyner, who is an internet marketing superstar and best-selling author for Wiley. And one day years ago, remember I said that I was in the frugality space a long time ago? So I get an order for my book on Having Fun Cheaply. It was after I converted it to an ebook, so it was sometime after 2003. And it's an order from a third-party reseller, so it wasn't even directly from Mark, but there is an order from Mark Joyner for this $8.50 ebook on Having Fun Cheaply. Oh, this is interesting. I knew this guy was a multimillionaire. So, well, I'm not sure why you want this, but okay. And his email address was in the order, and I wrote to him, and I said, I'm filling your order, and thank you so much. And by the way, I have this other book. Okay, so I guess it was 2003 was when that other book came out, Principal Profit, that I'd like to send you as a gift. And so he sent me his address in New Zealand, and I was not very happy about shipping it to New Zealand, but I kept my word. He loved the book. He gave me an endorsement. And then we started some back and forth. He contacted me and asked me to do a essay for his book, The Great Formula. So I have half a chapter in there. And actually, the BBC called me thinking about doing an interview once because they saw me in there. The interview didn't materialize, but it was pretty clear that this was a book that was getting noticed. So, and then I asked him, I had a radio show for a while, I asked him if he would do an interview over the phone for my radio show, and I said specifically what I wanted to talk about was marketing and social change, which is something that I could tell that he was involved with but very quiet about. And when you heard him talk generally back then, it was all about these are the things you can, the weapons of internet marketing. It was really kind of very militarist, very hard sell, and the social change stuff was, you really had to look for it. But I found it. So I said, how about we do, you've never talked about this. Why don't we talk about it? So yeah. He did an hour interview with me for my radio show, and then I made it available online at a certain point. And then we went back and forth doing each other little favors. And then one day out of the blue, I get an email from Mark saying, would you like the name of my editor at John Wiley & Sons? Well, yeah! So my sending him a free book and paying $10 or $12 to ship it to New Zealand got me the contract to do Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green.
Yeah, wow. So basically, you obviously giving out a free copy was a huge win for you and basically the future of whatever it was you were working on, these current books that you've got now.
Yeah, that was so who knew? I had no way of knowing that what I did in 2003 would mean a book contract with a major publisher in 2009 and a collaboration with J. Conrad Levinson.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really awesome. I mean, and like I've said, some of the even stories I've mentioned, I've found that I've had a huge success by just, partnering up with some people. I know I landed a recent gig where, someone that I interviewed on my show, I think it was episode like 28 or 29, they referred me back to a job, and I never would have found that job, if it wasn't for interviewing them. I probably, they wouldn't have mentioned that to me.
Yeah. And interviewing is a great way to make connections among those who are better known than you. I've done a fair amount of interviewing. Years ago, I used to be a music reviewer.
Oh, really?
So I actually got to spend a half an hour on the phone with Joan Baez conducting an interview. I got to go backstage and ask Pete Seeger a few questions. Wow. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. But yeah, I didn't know if there was anything else you wanted to share. I figured we could probably wrap this up. I know we've been going about a half hour or so.
Okay. I think one important thing to realize is that there's always going to be some place where you can combine your passion and a market. You need both. You want something where you're good at it, you enjoy doing it, you can create a following, and the following is willing to pay. So like I went after the frugality market when I was younger and didn't know better, and the frugality market doesn't buy anything. So it's not actually a very good place to brand yourself.
Right.
And I got, I was very sexy to the media with that. People loved the idea of having fun cheaply, and I got major publicity, but I got like no sales.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's not good if you're not able to make any money from it,
Yeah. And yet I think that frugality stuff gave me some of the background that I need with the green stuff that I'm doing now and that does pay a decent living.
Yeah.
But it's something, again, I'm very passionate about it and I'm very good at it. And there are people who need it and are willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
So when you find that sweet spot, it's a very good thing. And I do also want to say that the two websites that I'm most focused on right now, one is making-green-sexy.com. That's brand new. And then the more established site is greenandprofitable.com. And lots of resources, particularly on the Green and Profitable site. Basically, I give out a lot of information, and I have found that makes me respected and valued, and people turn to me.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely put a link in the show notes, and I really appreciate you coming on today to share your stories and the partnerships you've been able to build, and I think it's really interesting kind of hearing how you were able to build some of these things and then create really powerful results for your current projects.
Yeah.
But thanks for coming on, and hopefully we'll speak again in the future.
It's been a pleasure.
Talk to you later.
All righty.
Hey guys, thanks for checking out today's episode with Shel Horowitz. Shel was actually, I believe, the first person to reach out to me through the Haro platform over at helpareporter.com. I thought it was sort of interesting to,
hear what he had to share in today's interview. I wasn't really sure how it would go because, you know, I really don't know much about this whole sort of like go green thing and how it relates to marketing. But, you know, I thought the conversation was really interesting and it was good to meet him and kind of understand how he's able to leverage a lot of these relationships and, you know, expand and, you know, just hearing his story about how he was able to leverage these connections from back even years before. And when he decided to launch some of his books, he was able to really leverage those connections and get a huge boost for, you know, kind of publicity around his book. So if you want to check out today's episode, you can head over to, or at least on the blog anyways, you can head over to voicesofmarketing.com/episode45. Thanks.